Attention, South Dakota residents. Everything is fine. Everything is beautiful. Go back to your homes. Go back to your jobs. Trust in the authority.
Work. Eat. Stay asleep. Work. Eat. Stay asleep. Work. Eat. Stay asleep. Work. Stay asleep.
Keeping you docile and distracted during times of uncertainty. This is the South Dakota Department of Propaganda Podcast.
Today we're talking about Native American rights activist Leonard Peltier. He's been in prison for nearly 50 years and at 79 years old. He's up for a parole hearing on Monday. The issue is, his health is deteriorating and this might be his last chance at freedom.
Peltier was convicted in 1977 for the killing of two FBI agents during a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota back in 1975. Now there's long been controversy around his trial with accusations of misconduct and coercion of witnesses. Despite this, Peltier has maintained his innocence for all these years.
Notably, the U.S. government never actually found evidence that Peltier committed the crime. His conviction was largely based on him being present when these killings took place, leading to him being charged with aiding and abetting the crime.
His imprisonment has drawn widespread condemnation, with prominent figures like Pope Francis, Nelson Mandela, and even lawmakers from the U.S. Senate and Congress calling for his release. Amnesty International itself has a campaign focused on Peltier's case.
At the upcoming hearing, two witnesses will speak on Peltier's behalf. One is a doctor who will testify about his health issues, including diabetes and an aortic aneurysm. The other witness is a prominent Native American ally to Peltier.
His defense team will argue for him to live out his final years in home confinement, considering the state of his health and imprisonment, which frequently involves lockdowns.
Despite all this support, there's a major stumbling block. The FBI is staunchly opposed to his release. The FBI Director Christopher Wray maintains that granting parole would only diminish the gravity of the crime and add to the suffering of the families of the agents who were killed.
However, last year, retired FBI Special Agent Colleen Rowley revealed that this opposition may be rooted more in vindictiveness and misplaced loyalties than injustice. It seems that this opposition is perhaps more about avoiding having to admit to misconduct during Peltier's trial.
If parole is denied again, there's only one other route left for Peltier, clemency granted by President Joe Biden. Democrats in Congress have publicly appealed to Biden several times now to grant clemency. President Biden recently visited an American cemetery outside of Paris, specifically the Aize-en-Marne American Cemetery, where over 2,200 Americans who fought and died in World War I are buried. This cemetery was significant in his campaign against former President Trump.
This is the same cemetery Trump was scheduled to visit back in 2018 on the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I, but he canceled the visit. The White House at the time stated that weather and potential traffic disruption were the reasons for the cancellation.
However, The Atlantic reported a different version of events, claiming that Trump called off the visit because he didn't want to get his hair wet in the rain and allegedly referred to the fallen Marines as losers and suckers. This report was heavily disputed by the Trump campaign.
It's important to note that Biden didn't mention Trump by name during his visit to the Aize-en-Marne Cemetery. He did take this opportunity, however, to stress on the importance of staying strong with our allies to avoid such battles in the future.
Biden has been highlighting this incident regularly during his campaign stops, asserting that it reflects Trump's unsuitability for presidency. His visit to this cemetery appears to underscore his commitment to honor fallen soldiers and contrast his leadership approach against that of his predecessor.
Compensating those sickened by radiation during uranium mining and milling activities in the Cold War expired last Friday. This happened despite active calls for its continuation.
The program was created by the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, passed in 1990, and so far it has paid over $2 billion to around 55,000 claimants who developed diseases like lung cancer after being exposed to radiation in these mining areas.
One place that benefited from this was South Dakota, where uranium mining and milling took place. 76 South Dakotans have received a total of $6.56 million from the fund.
Representative Dusty Johnson of South Dakota has called for a vote to reauthorize the fund. Also, James Moylan has proposed an amendment to expand eligibility and reauthorize the fund.
Although the U.S. Senate voted in March to extend the life of the fund and expand its range, the House has yet to act on it. This is definitely a story we'll be watching closely.
Indeed, Samantha. Advocates have vowed to keep pushing Congress for action on this issue.
One trick is to tell them stories that don't go anywhere.
And he said, nobody ever asked this question, and it must be because of MIT, my relationship to MIT. Very smart. He goes, I say, what would happen if the boat sank from its weight, and you're in the boat, and you have this tremendously powerful battery, and the battery's now underwater, and there's a shark that's approximately 10 yards over there. By the way, a lot of shark attacks lately. Do you notice that? A lot of shark. I watched some guys justifying it today. Well, they weren't really that angry. They bit off the young lady's leg because of the fact that they were not hungry, but they misunderstood who she was. These people are crazy. He said there's no problem with sharks. They just didn't really understand a young woman swimming. Now it really got decimated, and other people too. A lot of shark attacks. So I said, so there's a shark 10 yards away from the boat, 10 yards or here. Do I get electrocuted if the boat is sinking, water goes over the battery, the boat is sinking? Do I stay on top of the boat and get electrocuted, or do I jump over by the shark and not get electrocuted? Because I will tell you, he didn't know the answer. He said, you know, nobody's ever asked me that question. I said, I think it's a good question. I think there's a lot of electric current coming through that water. But you know what I'd do if there was a shark? Or you get electrocuted, I'll take electrocution every single time. I'm not getting near the shore. So we could...
Like the time I caught the ferry over to Shelbyville? I needed a new heel for my shoe. So I decided to go to Morganville, which is what they call Shelbyville in those days. So I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style at the time.
Sioux Falls celebrates Pride today with a parade and special events. And there are serious issues to go along the festivities. The South Dakota Standard. From the South Dakota Standard. Let's listen in.
Sioux Falls celebrated its annual Pride Parade and Festival on June 8th, showing its commitment to diversity and inclusion with a series of special events. According to Sioux Falls Pride President Rachel Polin, the event has seen continuous expansion since its inception in 2000.
The first Pride Parade in Sioux Falls occurred in 2019, and it has been growing ever since, drawing about 15,000 attendees each year. The festival aims to provide a safe space for the Lucia Plus and Two-Spirit community to gather and celebrate together.
This year's festival had over 80 vendors, which is an increase from the 60 to 70 vendors in previous years. The day kicked off with a parade through downtown at 10 a.m., followed by the Pride Festival at Sioux Falls Stadium, also known as the Birdcage.
The festival ran from 10:30 in the morning to 5 in the afternoon, with entertainment from 12 noon to 5 in the afternoon. It seems that Sioux Falls Pride was excited to hold the event at the Birdcage for the first time because it had outgrown its previous location at Terrace Park.
The event has come a long way since its beginnings in mid-2000, where it was hosted by the Center for Equality, now known as Sioux Falls Pride. They started off welcoming around 1,000 patrons, and now they welcome nearly 10,000 visitors from all around the region.
It's not just about the partying. The event is also seen as an opportunity to advocate for Lucia Plus rights and oppose any legislation that targets this community. In South Dakota, there is still a lot of work to be done to achieve basic equality for Lucia Plus individuals.
Rachel Pullen mentioned that despite some negative reactions on social media, it's important for Sioux Falls Pride to exist in order to educate people about their community and celebrate their progress toward equity.
In addition to this, mobile billboards advocating for abortion rights, sponsored by a coalition of abortion rights advocates, were also displayed during the event. They argue that abortion access is a critical LGBTQ+ issue as well.
That wraps up our conversation on Sioux Falls Pride. It's clear that while it's a celebration, it's also an enriching platform for advocacy and education.
By the looks of things, this event is here to stay and grow even more in the years to come. The Southern Poverty Law Center, or SPLC, recently released its annual report on hate and extremism. The report reveals that white nationalist and anti-LGBTQ plus groups rose to record levels in the U.S. last year.
The SPLC documented 835 active anti-government groups, an increase of 133 from 2022, and 595 hate groups, a 72-group increase over the previous year. White supremacy hate groups saw a 50% increase in 2023, while anti-LGBTQ plus organizations also rose by 33%.
The white supremacy activity is particularly concerning. Despite a slight decrease in rallies from 2022, the Southern Poverty Law Center recorded a record total of 165 white supremacy hate groups in 2023.
The rise in anti-LGBTQ plus organizations is largely attributed to the anti-trans movement on the far right. The Southern Poverty Law Center also noticed an uptick in leafleting and in-person events from these hate groups, with nearly 7,000 flyering incidents tracked last year.
In a worrying political development, these groups are actively seeking to influence mainstream politics. According to the report, some are even aligning with conservative projects like the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 Manifesto.
California, Florida, Texas, Pennsylvania, New York, Virginia, Georgia, North Carolina, Washington, and Ohio were named as leading states for numbers of anti-government and hate groups. California topped the list with 51 hate and 66 anti-government groups.
Florida is noteworthy too. It's home to leading figures in the parental rights movement and has the second most number of hate groups. And then there's the rise of anti-Semitism after Israel's offensive on the Gaza Strip following a terrorist attack by Hamas.
The report does highlight one decline, the militia movement. This comes after numerous Department of Justice prosecutions following the violent attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021.
The numbers of militias dropped to 52 in 2023. From 61 in 2022. The Oath Keepers militia significantly diminished its presence after its leader Stuart Rhodes was convicted for seditious conspiracy related to the January 6th attack.
Extremist group Blood Tribe, a neo-Nazi organization, claimed responsibility for a display of Nazi flags at an apparent rally in Pierre, South Dakota. The group staged the event on the steps of the state capitol building. The leader, Christopher Polhas, says this act was in response to South Dakota Gov. Christy Noem's statements.
The Blood Tribe, recognized as a hardcore white supremacist group by the Anti-Defamation League, did not have a permit for their rally. Upon orders from South Dakota Highway Patrol officers, they immediately dispersed. However, no charges have been filed yet.
Another group of people wearing similar attire carrying Nazi symbolism were spotted in downtown Deadwood. South Dakota State Auditor Rich Satgast encountered the protesters and expressed his disgust over such ideologies being promoted in the United States.
Blood Tribe has been involved in various protests nationwide since at least March 2023. They usually wear bright red shirts or vests and perform Hitler salutes and white power chants. At times, they are even armed.
After a similar march in Florida, Governor Noem addressed the situation stating Nazis are not welcome in South Dakota. Polhas responded by mocking House Bill 1076, legislation defining anti-Semitism in state law.
The Sioux Falls branch of the NAP asked authorities and law enforcement to investigate the incident and hold accountable those complicit in such displays. They noted that this is indicative of rising hate and intolerance.
With this incident happening just after the 80th anniversary of D-Day, reminders of past battles against such ideologies are fresh. The overall message is clear. These neo-Nazi ideologies are not welcome in America.
South Dakota political leaders condemned a Nazi demonstration that occurred on the Capitol grounds in Pierre. The state's Department of Public Safety announced that the group held an unscheduled and unpermitted protest.
Images circulated online about a dozen people donned in red and black, faces covered by black masks, carrying a Nazi flag. Governor Kristi Noem publicly expressed that Nazis are not welcome in South Dakota, emphasizing the state's stand for life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
U.S. Senator Mike Rounds and U.S. Representative Dusty Johnson also condemned this event. This incident is part of a rising trend of in-person demonstrations by white nationalists and far-right groups, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center.